Hello and welcome to Earth Matters. I'm your host, Lawson Hunter. We have a special guest in our studio today, Chris McLaughlin, who is the Executive Director of the Bay Area Restoration Council. Chris, welcome to Earth Matters.
Hi, Lawson. Good to be here.
All right. Good. Well, we've survived the polar vortex, or at least the latest one.
Barely.
Not as bad as some other places. And I wanted to bring you on. You've been on before, but I want to remind our listeners, what BARC, B-A-R-C, does in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Give us an idea of briefly what the Bay Area Restoration Council does, and then we'll look at 2018.
Right. So BARC, as we're affectionately known, has been around since 1991, and we represent the public interest in the restoration of Hamilton Harbor. And for your listeners who aren't familiar with Hamilton and the Bay here, the Hamilton Harbor was heavily industrialized over the course of the 20th century and before that, and became one of the most polluted, degraded ecosystems in Canada and all of the Great Lakes. And in the last 30 years, there's been a slow, painstaking recovery. And the Bay Area Restoration Council represents the public interest in that process. Is a member of the Remedial Action Plan, which is a program, a binational program, to clean up degraded, contaminated areas all across the Great Lakes, Hamilton being the worst on the Canadian side, so to speak, the worst. And we do community engagement and public events and educational programming. For example, in 2018, we had 16,245 students participate in our educational programming, and we do a whole bunch of other stuff as well.
All right. So you oversee what's going on in the Hamilton Harbor, as you said, one of the most polluted sites in North America. Hopefully that's getting better. Education programs, outreach, letting the people in the Hamilton area know what's going on in their neighborhood, because people are busy. They can't keep up with what's going on. Randall Reef development has stretched over years, so I mean, the perennial question is it fixed yet? Is it done yet? Is it done yet? And the answer is?
We're getting there. 3 steps forward, 2 steps back on a good year. Mm-hmm. You know, as many people across the Great Lakes will know, the past couple of years have been exceptional with low water levels and then high water levels exceeding, you know, the 100-year flood pretty much across the entire watershed. Mm-hmm. And so you get, you know, with high water levels, we saw so many hundreds, thousands of volunteer hours in terms of planting in Coots Paradise Marsh over many years, for example, wiped out. Those areas just didn't survive the high water. And so it's difficult to explain to the general public, like you said, who, you know, that made it might, if we're lucky, dip into these issues on occasion. It's difficult to explain, you know, how those seemingly failed activities, you know, shouldn't cause people to roll their eyes and suggest that the whole thing has just been a waste. And in fact, you know, as with everything in life, right, the challenges that everybody faces in their own personal lives, I think they can relate to the idea that some days are better than others. But generally, you know, you're working hard to get somewhere, to feel like you're getting ahead. And certainly that's been the case with the Remedial Action Plan, or the RAP, as we call it, over the past 25, 30 years.
Right, right. And how many years have you been at the Bay Area Restoration
Council? This is my 8th year.
8th year, yeah. And give me an idea of the general response from the community. I know that BARC is well respected within the environmental community, but what about the general community? Have we broken through? Have we kind of got notice? And how can you measure that?
That's a good question. How can you measure that?
I'll give you a hint. Tree plantings.
Well, certainly, right? And every year we plant literally thousands of cattails in the marsh, for example. We don't do too many tree plantings, but other groups are doing that as well. So certainly you can measure those things. But in terms of the overall response that you get, the knowledge, for example, just, you know, what percentage of people know that we exist, that the RAP exists, they know generally that that there have been efforts to improve the harbor. I think public perceptions haven't kept up with the reality of where we're at. People still perceive Hamilton Harbor as being a far more degraded place than it actually is. We certainly came by that reputation, honestly, over many decades. But, you know, in terms of who knows about bark and the actual, you know, projects and where things are at on a daily basis, not too many people are dialed into that. But I do get a terrific response at City Hall, for example. Mm-hmm. The councillors certainly know who we are. And, I mean, it's hard to argue against clean water. Some politicians seem bent on doing it just through the policies that they're promoting, for example. But it's certainly locally in Hamilton and in Burlington, there's tremendous support for the work of the RAP. And I should just say, like, the, you know, the upgrades to the Skyway wastewater treatment plant, which serves Burlington and Halton, for example, those have already been done. It's one of the best wastewater plants in North America. Hamilton's is underway. The city of Hamilton has committed $132 million to the latest upgrades, for example, mm-hmm. and that's being matched by federal and provincial funding, which is just an enormous project. You know, think of how many other things does the municipality spend that kind of money on. It's not. And so it's going to get its money's worth. The quality of the water coming out of the Hamilton's main wastewater plant by about 2021 is actually going to improve water quality in the bay as a whole. Mm-hmm. Such will be the quality of the water in terms of phosphorus, principally phosphorus. Such will be the water quality coming out of that plant that it'll actually reduce phosphorus levels. And that has a direct impact then on algae blooms, for example, which people see, you know, that's one of the things where the rubber really hits the road, right? Where people at the shoreline can see whether or not the water is clean. Can mm-hmm. I can see down? I can see fish underwater, or is it just a stinking mass of green and brown filth, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's where people are going to really see the difference. Fingers crossed, right? I mean, it's an ecosystem. So it's not changing the spark plugs in your car, the battery, and then off it goes again, right? Ecosystems are somewhere in between that. My car's not running. My car's working perfectly now, right? Mm. It's somewhere in between, and we can't really put our finger on it exactly. The remedial action plan and the actions that hopefully will lead to the improvements that we can see in the environment, it's a very well thought through plan. But again, we're dealing with an ecosystem, and oftentimes, whether it's high water, low water, algae, you know, fish and invasives and so forth, all the issues that we're faced with, we're left scratching our heads to some degree. But over time, contamination levels in the harbor have come down. Mm-hmm. We've seen the restoration of – we've seen eagles nesting in Coots Paradise up in the watershed. We've seen the return of walleye, which is top native predator to the harbor, and stories about, you know, the winter fishery that's reemerged after it's gone missing for generations, mm-hmm. right? So there are signals that are really positive, and you can trend over time the reduction of contamination, the reduction of phosphorus, toxic chemicals, for example. So where we used to have a generally degraded ecosystem, like throughout from top to bottom, from east to west. Now we have, with respect to contamination, for example, we've got these legacy problems, which is something everybody across the Great Lakes will understand. Everybody in any industrialized city across the world would understand that, you know, we're still left – the corporation's long gone, right? It was folded 50 years ago and all the jobs were lost and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And all we've got left is this legacy of all the proud work that, you know, Dad or Grandpa used to do, and the pile of contamination that we're left to deal with and argue over who's going to pay to fix it.
Right, right. And it must be gratifying to work on something, as you say, that you can visually see. So much of the media focuses on climate change, which the climate change deniers are going to say, well, I can't see a difference, or I don't feel a difference, polar vortexes aside. But to, as you say, go to the shoreline and see the difference, to feel comfortable, to let your children go into the water now, whereas there was always a ban on going into the water, that makes a difference, and it's tangible and people can realize there is something changing.
Well, we've been running a survey now for about 2 months. People can find that at our website at hamiltonharbor.ca. We've been running a survey. We've got well north of 100 people now responding. The survey is asking about public perceptions. How do you, over your time in Hamilton, whether it's your lifetime or the last 5 or 10 years that you've lived here, how is your perception of the harbor changed? And, you know, how does it smell? How does it look? How does it feel? What do you hear? What do you see? And, in fact, the really neat part is a map that people can upload photographs and descriptions of, I really like it right here because. We've gotten a phenomenal response to that, really, to be honest. To have, you know, 100 and now 120 or so people sit down, take the time to go through, answer a bunch of questions about, you know, what's the water look like? What do you see? What do you like? What do you not like?
What do you do on the shore or
– Yeah,
or
activities, like absolutely.
Skating in the winter or kayaking in the summer, canoeing.
This is all part of a project that we started in 2018 to produce some information and a recommendation for the federal government about what to do about one of the categories of the Remedial Action Plan, which is the aesthetic quality of the harbor. And certainly – if you go back to the 1950s and 60s when the degradation of the harbor, the loss of water quality and habitat and fish and so forth was at its worst, there can be absolutely no question that there's been tremendous improvement in the harbor. And Hamilton Harbor of, you know, days gone by is a relic of an industrial age that we're not prepared to sustain any longer. But that doesn't really matter to the people that have been here for 5 or 10 or even grew up here over the last 20 or 25 years. You know, what was going on in the 1950s isn't really relevant to them, except for the fact that we still have this – it's still this perceived place, right, that's heavily degraded. But how do they perceive it now? And the response has been overwhelmingly positive. People are recognizing that – they saw an algae bloom, like a really bad algae bloom in 2018. That could have been because of the failed infrastructure in Shadoke Creek, which is one of the channels that feeds into Coots Paradise Marsh, which feeds into the west end of the harbor. The west harbor being the place where we want people getting safely back into the water and recreating, for example. So the city of Hamilton's failed infrastructure back in the spring dumped a huge volume of untreated raw sewage into the creek channel, which fed into the marsh, which fed into the harbor. And you can see sampling numbers of E. coli in the millions into the hundreds of thousands, and it drops by a zero as we get out into the West Harbor and that sewage is diluted. But it was this massive, something we haven't seen in terms of sewage at the shoreline in decades, right? But basically what we did was fertilize the West Harbor and then later in the summer saw an algal bloom that people claimed, you know, I haven't seen that in decades and I've been boating here since 1975. And I heard lots of these stories, right, that we haven't seen it this bad. So it can't be proven that it was a direct linkage, but there is no other explanation that we're being given, right? So one can only assume that if we fix the infrastructure that performs the sewer system performs the way it's supposed to and keeps the waste out of the water, that the water will continue to get better. And like I said, with changes to the wastewater treatment plant in coming years, we expect the likelihood or at least the conditions for algal blooms to go down. But this is people all across the world are experiencing algal blooms for unknown reasons. We had, one of the signature places in Canada, Algonquin Park here in Ontario, experienced closures of canoe routes and lakes being closed this summer due to algae in the summer of 2018. It's a crisis situation in Florida, and for a place that that relies on its shoreline for to draw tourists from all over the place. It's a crisis all around the world. People are experiencing algal blooms. Scientists are scratching their heads. There are conferences, you know, all over the world with people coming together to try and figure out, and you know, what can we do about this? And is it linked to climate change? It's probably linked to a lot of things. So land use, agriculture, inputs of nutrients into water from all kinds of sources, and certainly climate change may be playing a role as well. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's
okay. Well, we're going to take
where we're at.
We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to open it up a little bit to some of the other events outside of the Hamilton area in 2018.
Lawson Hunter here, host and producer of Earth Matters. I wanted to thank all the listeners of Earth Matters for your continuing support. As always, please feel free to send us your comments, suggestions, and thoughts on topics and people we should look at for future programs. Email us at earthmatters@newsandcomment.com, newsandcomment.com, or follow us on Twitter at earthmatters3. I'd also like to encourage you to like, rate, and share Earth Matters with others so that our work can reach a larger audience. Thanks for listening. Earth Matters examines the impacts we have on the environment and reports on solutions and alternatives that help protect and preserve a healthy planet.
All right, we're back with Earth Matters and my guest, Chris McLaughlin. We're going to, as I said, open it up to about 2018 and some of the events. There were a lot of events. I don't know if 2018 was a big year or just we were more aware of what was going on. There was the, you know, the fire in California. And it's funny being in Canada, talking about this big fire in California. 2 years before that, there was the big fire in Fort McMurray, Alberta. And the whole town had to evacuate. And it was eerie how much it echoed, the California echoed Fort McMurray. People were literally in their car driving with embers falling onto their car as they're trying to escape from the fire. You know, how earlier said, how do we explain these things? And, you know, the immediate message is that we're not being very smart about where we locate our housing and what have you. Putting a house in the middle of a forest, well, the way things are going, raking the ground or not, who cares, there's going to be forest fires. So aside from the fires, what else did you sort of caught your attention in 2018?
Well, certainly with respect to forest fires, you can extend that to if you want to think about water, which is sort of where I'm at. You know, in terms of storm events and flooding and whatnot, we still do this everywhere on a local level. These are issues in Ontario around the threats from flooding, for example. I would just mention, I guess, since I have a chance to plug some work that we've done with the help of the Ontario Trillium Foundation over the last 3 years, BARC has partnered with schools all over the Harbour's watershed to build rain gardens, which is a way of trying to get our landscape to mimic what was here before we paved over everything. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the gist being for your listeners that, you know, you imagine being a raindrop that falls from the sky, you land on the leaf of a tree or a plant, and it takes you quite a while to fall from one leaf to another and eventually hit the ground, and then you join a whole bunch of others, raindrops in a puddle, and you sit around for a while, and you're far more likely to reach surface water like a creek or a stream nearby by getting down into the ground and going through the ground until you across sideways until you reach surface water than you are across the land. And mm-hmm. what we've done by paving and hardening surfaces in the way that we develop and we use the land, we cause water to move very quickly across the landscape. Unlike in an undeveloped landscape where the water moves very slowly, we cause it to move very quickly. And that process picks up contaminants. So you can imagine the oil that drips from your car, for example, just one place mm-hmm. where we get those kinds of contaminants. picks that up, moves it very quickly across the landscape, and does a couple of things. It can cause erosion in some areas. It can overwhelm our sewer systems. And so in a place like Hamilton, for example, with a combined sewer in many of the old places, so the older neighborhoods up until about 1970, have one pipe under the street that collects everything from toilets and stormwater, so rain that falls on the ground. The problem is when that pipe hits 100%, it either comes backwards up into basements, which we really don't want, or it's sent out into the environment as a combined sewer overflow. One thing that the city of Hamilton has done is build a number of overflow tanks. So for locals here in Hamilton and Burlington, we'll know the Cathedral right at the junction of Main and King and the Highway 403. There's a huge cathedral on the hill. Well, there's a huge cathedral across the street behind the Fortino's Plaza underwater, a cathedral to stormwater and sewage. So there's literally a massive volume tank with a massive volume underneath the ground there that rather than have that go out into the environment, that diluted sewage and stormwater is held until the storm subsides and capacity they have available capacity at the wastewater treatment plant. Right. So this is helping a lot. We still get overflow events, and we've just had a little bit of a win at Hamilton City Hall recently. The council has directed staff to begin notifying the public when this happens, and so there'll be a process to develop that system. Might cost a little bit of money, I suspect, but it is the kind of information that people should have. They should know when these things are happening. We do have the technology to alert people, and if we're going to encourage people to safely go in the water, we need to have these kinds of systems to alert them to the safety. We become accustomed to expecting that of our governments to tell us, you know, if food is safe to eat, if water is safe to swim in, and so on and so on, right? But you'd asked about, you know, trying to get people to approve. Do our houses literally have to be on fire in order for people to really uptake the idea that climate is changing and that we all have individual roles to play, right? And that's really hard because you're going to suggest to somebody that they do their part and they get out of their car and they get on that bus. And so they do that. They plan ahead and they do that for tomorrow, right? And then they're standing there in the pouring rain or the freezing cold or whatever at a bus stop watching every single other car that was there yesterday go by.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How do you get that critical mass of people to now join in so that they're waiting for the bus and then the pressure is put on the municipality to improve that service? As everyone will know, that's a really hard thing to do, right? And then plus we've got governments actively working against the process to make things better in the long run, and it's no surprise that they're doing that because
they're short term focused.
They're short term focused, and so three steps forward and two steps back on a good day, the other way, you know, two forward and three back on a bad day.
Let's try and introduce a positive note. What do you think of Greta Thunberg and the student protests in Australia and Washington, D.C. and Belgium? 30,000 students hit the street last weekend. Is this a good thing?
This is a marvelous thing. And, of course, the people that you see and the ages that are reflected in Parliament in Canada and especially in Congress in the United States and in other places, those people are if not grandparents already, they're soon to be grandparents. And so this is the grandchildren that we're talking about, right? These are the people that are going to be most affected by climate change for the longest period of time. And, you know, they need more than just the so-called thoughts and prayers that go out to people in circumstances that, you know, policy could have something to say about, right? We could use policy and other levers of government to actually improve systems and circumstances for people, but we're not motivated to. And so 30,000 people in the street, it's a fair question to ask, like how many people is it going to take before you start paying attention? And I thought, I have a 15-year-old daughter, and she's articulate, and she takes her studies very seriously, and she's really engaged in these issues. But and so I know that it's how remarkable it is to have somebody who has the courage that mm-hmm. Greta did to go in front of a global audience like that, like the remarkable courage, and to sit there and basically like tear a strip off, and, yep, and a necessary exactly. strip,
yep.
right?
Yep. Yeah, we can't talk to the adults anymore. They're not listening, so we'll have to talk to the children.
That's absolutely true. Absolutely true.
And things like Extinction Rebellion in the UK, where people are saying, you know what, the world is going to hell in a handbasket. What's the difference? I don't care about my studies. I don't care about my future because I got to get this fixed. We got to get this fixed. That kind of message. To me, that was the shining light for 2018, and I hope it continues, and I hope it gets stronger and stronger, and more people realize you got to put down whatever it is you're doing and start doing something. And as you say, it's such a mind shift for people to do, but we've got to come to that realization.
I wouldn't want to leave people with the impression, though, that they have to do a Greta, so to speak, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That when I get the opportunity to speak to a group like a Rotary group, a group of students, for example, a community association, any group of what I say my fellow citizens.
Mm-hmm.
I live here in the watershed. I'm concerned about these things. I just happen to be in this job.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it's my responsibility to marshal resources and have staff that go out and meet people and whatnot. It's my responsibility to come and talk to you. And it doesn't, but it's not important really that my name's up on the slide here, right? That mm-hmm. I'm the speaker. It's like, we're all citizens here. We all have a role to play. And I wouldn't want people to think that, okay, the example that I use is the history of the harbor. And if you could go back to the 1830s, for example, and those, you know, the first wharves that stuck out into the bay and the shipping that first occurred when Hamilton Harbor was opened up to the Great Lakes, for example. Even 100 years ago when the steel companies in Hamilton were first started, those industrialists couldn't imagine what the economy would look like 50 years later, 100 years later. They couldn't imagine. And so the amount of sweat and toil that went in and risk that went into ruining the place in the end, because that was mm-hmm. the end result, the amount of effort that went into that was enormous over yeah. such a long period of time. So let's not forget that it's taken 30 years now of the remedial action plan process to get as good as it's gotten so far.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of work left to do. And wherever you are and you're listening to this, I guess take a little bit of solace in the fact that the problems took so long to create, they're going to take a long time. So it's really just, you know, day by day assessing what can I do, right? And so for the average person, talk to your neighbor over the back fence and explain to them.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, great, great advice. Good way to start. Well, 30 minutes goes by really quickly.
Indeed.
Especially when you're a bit passionate about something. Thank you very much, Chris McLaughlin of the Bay Area Restoration Council, for coming and joining us on Earth Matters, and hope to have you back again soon. Take care.
My pleasure. Thanks.